Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
The Beatles, Take That, the Spice Girls, One Direction, all bands that made headlines around the world and devastated fans when they announced that they were breaking up. Now, last week we spoke about K-pop sensation BTS and how their recent announcement of a hiatus has fans fearing the worst. So we wanted to ask today what factors commonly lead to band breakups. Is it always messy and acrimonious? And why do we treasure some while others just sink without a trace? To answer all of these questions, I'm joined in the studio by Simon Marr, Managing Director at 8radio.com. Good morning, Simon.
Morning.
Now, if we're talking about bands breaking up, Simon, it's hard to start with anyone other than this. Beatles, of course.
Yes.
And it's apt that we're talking about them because people are still camping out, as we saw at the weekend, to see Paul McCartney. But explain to us why things wound up for the Beatles at the height of their powers.
Right. Well, see, what people tend to look for when they're talking about band breakups is they look for the real simple, you know, is that it was this, Yoko Ono came along and then the Beatles broke up, as if nothing was ever going to cause a band to break up. And it's great because everybody can blame Yoko. Now, Yoko was inevitably, she was part of the decision. But I think that with a lot of bands, you reach a point, whether that's creatively or just personally, where it's like, OK, we've been stuck together now for 10 or 12 years. We need to be somewhere else. And I think that's what happened with the Beatles. The Beatles could have gone on. They weren't in decline. You know, Abbey Road is fantastic stuff. You know, Sgt. Pepper's, all of that stuff that is in the latter half of their career was great. So musically, they were still developing. But personally, they needed to not be around each other for a while. And they had really bad fallouts, particularly John and Paul, which they eventually patched up. But it probably took them 4 or 5 years then, you know, to patch it up and then be able to work together again. But they could have gone on. Many, many years. They could have gone back out on tour. There was talk that in the early 70s they were actually going to go and perform live again because they hadn't performed live since the mid 60s because they couldn't, because nobody could ever hear the gigs. You know, so they were just a studio band. And possibly they could have gone on, but I think Yoko coming along gave him, we call it a natural break and a natural reason why we got to stop now.
Yeah, but you say that maybe she's blamed unfairly.
I think so. I think she's the soap opera answer.
Yes.
You know, the pantomime villain who came in. And while she was definitely involved, I don't think she was the only factor by any means.
Well, speaking of Yoko, bands built on relationships and sometimes that can lead to fantastic music like this. Reminds me of borrowing my brother's copy of that album all those years ago. Fleetwood Mac, relationships.
Yes.
Explain, Fleetwood Mac.
Well, look, I know it's early in the morning, but so many of the great albums are themed around sex and relationships and things being particularly steamy at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to great records at that point. It leads to fantastic records immediately after the breakup. But then after that again, you know, the spark tends to be gone. It's the really, really difficult part. But while you were in that, in the sort of the maelstrom of it all, is that you get great records.
So what was going on? Everything was going on.
Everything was going on with everybody. it's the simplest way to explain it. You know, and what generally happens is you do have that because there is a, like, everything is about energy and it's about a momentum. You know, and while that momentum is there, you're going to get the great records. The great records are going to come out of that. In my view, is that the particularly great records are the immediate breakup records. So when that is there, so there's a sort of, it's the positive energy is gone, the negative energy is there, but people haven't quite reached the level yet where they can't be in the same room as one another. So there's still a tension, but there's still a creative energy, and that's where you get the really good stuff.
And to take that to the nth degree, we have ABBA, of course.
Of course. And ABBA are probably the best example of this. They came along, they won the Eurovision. They were huge. They were the biggest band in the world. They got married. The two couples got married. By 79, the first breakup had happened. It was into the very, I think it was 81 when the second breakup happened. And what happened then was that probably for ABBA, ABBA were struggling musically at that stage themselves. Like, they were still producing good stuff, but a lot of that sort of late 70s disco thing had started to fade away. So they were struggling to find the point where they should be. And again, possibly fortuitously for us as music fans, the marriages fell apart.
Yeah, you know, two married couples in one of the biggest bands in the world. Like, what could possibly
everything,
go wrong?
Clara, everything. But again, it made for great records. Like, the last ABBA record, The Visitors, is an absolute, if you're going to go out on a record, it's the way to go, you know. And it gave them something that was a really, really obvious point to go out on, and they were able to, and they had the whatever, whether it's the sense or something that made them go, okay, now's the time to stop, and we're never going to do this again.
Mm-hmm. And now they're holograms.
And now they're holograms, yeah, yeah. And that's which is just strange. But when you think, like, back in the Vegas day, when Vegas were offering people £1 million a night, you know, to play a run of shows in Caesar's Palace or whatever it was, they were offered everything to get back together again. But they were either lucky enough, or they were smart enough to be able to go, you know, we just don't want to.
Or rich enough.
But to be able to resist that temptation all of the time and to do it. And they've talked about it, and all four of them have talked about it. We just don't want to go back there. It was a time, and it was a great time, but that was in the past.
Okay, so you said earlier on that the Beatles probably could have gone on, pushed it another 5-10 years, and there are bands that just know when it's time to stop. Sidewinder Sleeps, great song. What prompted them, though, to call it a day?
They were one of the bands that managed to quit while they were ahead, you know, and I don't know what it was that made the sort of the final decision for them, but they were still producing very good records. They were still like an amazing live band. Probably one of my favourite live gigs ever is R.E.M. in Ardgillan and in North Dublin. And that's just close enough to the end of their career, but they made the decision. It's like, right, we've done it now. And whether that was a creative thing, it doesn't look like they fell out personally. Mm-hmm. But again, you're probably right, what you said earlier on, that they could afford to break up.
Yeah.
You know, is that
like, there's no sense, you know, having been to that gig towards the end, was there a sense that they were bored, fed up, didn't like each other?
You just got the sense that they were still loving this. They were doing this and they were loving playing the songs. You know, and there were some songs, like every band, there were some songs that you could see that they loved playing more than others, but they loved the stage. They loved being R.E.M.
Well, that's a mystery then, because it's hard to give up something that you love.
See, that's the thing. It takes real courage, I suppose, to do that and to be able to say, right, okay, we've had enough. We can move on and we leave our legacy behind. And it's great to be able to leave your legacy untarnished and know that, well, we never released a bad album. And, you know, creatively for an artist, that must be an amazing thing, you know, rather than the ones who kind of go, those last two or three albums are a little bit dodgy, like, you know.
Well, let's talk about those ones. Yeah. The ones that limped on when they probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, see, and this is always the thing, and this will get me into trouble. Inevitably, this will get me into trouble because I think there are certain bands who end up almost being tribute bands to themselves.
Yes.
You know, and I would include the Rolling Stones in that.
You're in massive trouble.
Yeah, I told you. I would include the Rolling Stones. I would include The Who in that as well. And I think that they, you know,
bigger trouble.
Yeah, they perform, and they perform very well, and I'm full of admiration.
Any more trouble, you know, you'd like to get into?
There is a question to be asked while I am getting myself into trouble about maybe the likes of U2. You know, if U2 announced a set of gigs, you know, for this summer, would people be going along to hear stuff from, you know, Songs from Experience, or do they want Pride in the Name of Love? Do they want New Year's Day? You know, do
I
do
see
they
what
want,
you're saying, yeah. But I'll tell you what, if they announced gigs this summer,
I would
you'd
be there. Oh, completely.
And it would be complete sellout.
Completely so. But I just want, I suppose I'm trying to look at it even from the musician's perspective, is that if I go on stage and I play my new material, which is what I want to do, whether I'm Mick Jagger or Roger Daltrey or Bono or whatever it is, and the crowd are going, yeah, that's all very good, but when are you going to get to?
Is that not always the way, though, when you're at a gig and they say, now, we'd like to play something from the new album, and everyone's
Ugh. But if I'm never going to play something from the last 10 years, and people go,
oh, yeah, then you're in trouble.
See,
yeah.
That's the thing. And it's being at that point of knowing where it is to quit, but you can see why bands would go on. Because, my goodness, what else you're going to do if you're the Rolling Stones and you can still go and play to 100,000 people somewhere, like, you know, yeah, I can understand absolutely why you would, you know,
yes,
just for the buzz of it. But creatively, there must be a little nagging doubt at 3 a.m. when your brain goes, nobody wants to hear the new songs.
Ray was at REM in Ardgillan as well and absolutely loved it too. He completely agrees with you. But we want to talk about the aftermath of the bands breaking up now, Simon, and those that go on to have a sparkling solo career. Let's take a listen to this. No disrespect to Michelle and Kelly,
nope.
But it was only a matter of time.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And it was like Beyonce was always going to be the breakout star. And probably most bands have the breakout star. And that there was, I suppose there's a musical conspiracy theory that the people who put the bands together know this at the very, very start. But I think with a lot of bands, it becomes apparent as time goes on. You know, you end up with 5 people and you hope that you're going to get your breakout star out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that it's not that the bands are built. I suspect Destiny's Child was not built around Beyonce. But it became quite clear quite quickly, oh my goodness, Beyonce is a very, very special talent. And indeed she is.
Was Justin Timberlake obvious? I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Yeah, not immediately so. And I think because bands like NSYNC, because they were so young, is that it takes time for people to find themselves, you know, and to just discover whether, you know, there is going to be somebody with real star quality. And when a lot of these bands have been put together, and that goes, this isn't just a recent boy and a girl band thing. Like, you go back to the Monkees. So the Monkees were like mid-1960s.
Yeah.
And they were being put together because you have the guy, you know, you have the cute guy, you had Davy Jones, you know, he was the little English guy. You had the slightly oddball guy with the woolly hat, all of that stuff. But that's what you put together, and anything else that happened afterwards was a mixture of sort of luck and happenstance, you know. And I think it happens a lot with these bands as well, that you happen to find these people then who come out. But once you see the star, I'm sure the other people in the band, I'm sure Kelly and Michelle kind of went, uh-oh.
Yes.
You know, when you start not to get all of the lines in the chorus, or when you're that little bit further back in the mix, or when you watch the video and it's not your face they're seeing, then you know.
Then you know.
Like, yes, yeah, yeah.
And the breakups then that have caused the teenage heartbreaks.
Yeah.
Take that. Speaking of breakout stars as well, of course, Robbie was the first one, wasn't he, to say off?
He was. And he made that decision. He said he musically wasn't being taken seriously enough at that stage. So when the band would have started, it wouldn't necessarily, they would have been taken on for the musical prowess, you know, or anything along those lines. It's like, you guys are good performers. You look great on video. You're going to look great in front of an audience. But then people get the smell of themselves. They get notions as time goes on. And then Robbie was a great one for that. But
nobody thought at that time that he was going to make it.
No,
I remember he was a bit of a mess.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, he would say that himself.
Yeah,
and then look what happened down the line.
But I think he became a great part of the narrative for Take That. You know, it was that you have this, you build it up, you start to lose a bit of momentum. What are we going to do? Said, oh, the scruffy guy, the one who's a bit mad, he wants to leave the band. Great. Whatever happens to him, it's great because it keeps the momentum going. Like, you know, and yeah, but nobody would have predicted that Robbie Williams would have become the global megastar that he was.
Yeah, and then they got back together, didn't they, for a successful album and tour.
They did, and they're still doing the rounds now, but I think is there two original Take Thatters, or maybe 3 who are left in the band now at this stage. Mm-hmm. But they came back together, and Robbie Williams got back with the band at one stage, and they're due, I think, a 25th anniversary. So I would never ever rule out the possibility of any of these bands getting back together.
Well, we've covered the romantic relationships in bands and what can happen there. But when it comes to acrimony, few do it better than siblings. And that holds true for siblings in bands. And here's a band now that's no stranger to a brotherly ruck from time to time. Get over themselves and get back together.
Yeah, and they will, Claire. They will.
Really?
Oasis will get back together at some stage. Yeah, their shtick was always were the rowing siblings, like, you know. And then their shtick was, you know, we're rowing but we love each other, you know. And then it became we're rowing and then we have a big fight, you know. But the cynic in
you kind of... The big fight now has been going on for a long time.
See, this is the thing. But the big fight sold an awful lot of records and sold an awful lot of tickets. Oasis star was on the wane by the time it got to that famous night in Paris, you know. But it built, again, there was a new momentum built. Now look at us, you know, now we're actually fighting and there's a big rivalry between us, between High Flying Birds and BDI and whatever it is, you know. And they've kept on going and so we're never going to talk to each other again. And then they go, well, our kid, you know, I'm never going to play with our kid again. But I don't believe them. Right?
You expect to see them back together.
I absolutely
well, I hope
expect
that happens.
To see them back together, yes.
Other family bands famous for rowing?
Well, see, the Everly Brothers were always...
going back away now.
Yeah. No, the Everly Brothers were... And again, had been around for quite a long time. And what happens sometimes is whether band members become unhappy or else just become addicted to the rock and roll lifestyle. And that can lead to its own problems, you know. But there's a famous story and a famous image of, I think it is Phil Everly breaking a guitar over Don Everly's head because Don had arrived at a gig drunk and couldn't remember the lyrics, you know. And there will always be that. But there's probably almost a forgiveness of that, because you kind of go, oh, brothers, you know, well, look at them. Mm. What are they like? There's a sibling thing that people forgive. But it took them a good, and that's probably something about families more than music even. It tends to take them a very long time to come back together again. So, you know, you got Guns N' Roses all rowed and shouted at one another for years. You know, but got back together again relatively quickly. I think the Everly Brothers is the guts of 30 years before they performed on stage again.
I'm predicting the same for Oasis.
Yeah. And they may. And part of the shtick, when Oasis get back together again, part of the shtick will be that they will stand on stage. They're not going to be hugging, you know, or, you know, there's not going to be love hearts or great forgiveness or whatever involved in this. They're going to be standing there with an attitude because that's what they do. Okay, listen, this is rock and roll.
We've spoken about the boy bands, the family bands, the bands in relationships. The girl bands, Simon, now, including this one. Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna zig a zig. If you want my future, forget my past. Now, girl bands, run us through the best breakups.
So I suppose Spice Girls is probably one of the most well-known. So we mentioned earlier on, we mentioned Beyonce and the breakup, I suppose, or the fracturing back then. But Spice Girls was a big one, you know, and they quite quickly got to a point, because they became so famous so quickly, they got to a point where those rows started about, I want more lines, I want more time in the video. You know, I want to be the principal singer in this song. And that was always going to cause problems. And in the Spice Girls, it really did. And when it blew up properly in proper rock and roll soap opera fashion, which is the way that you want it to happen, because it's the way it should be. You know, you should go down in flames. And the Spice Girls went down in flames and then came back again. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised in the least if they came back again. But Diana Ross and Supremes is probably the most famous one, you know, is that the Supremes were formed. And people started to see, again, like the, you know, like a lot of the boy bands, they started to see that Diana Ross was the real talent or the real star within the band. But she happened to also be in a relationship with the band's manager at the time.
Trouble.
Yeah, which, like, this was never, ever going to go well. But what it did was it gave people a good reason to be very cross about all of this. Whereas if you looked at it and said, look, even if the manager and Diana Ross were not, you know, in a relationship together, to put it very politely, then Diana Ross would probably still have become the breakout star because she is yes. so she was so amazing.
You can see it.
You can see it. But you can also see how the other members of the Supremes would have got really, really ticked off about it and felt that they were being left behind because they weren't involved with the manager.
It's fascinating. I love it. Full of gossip and intrigue. Thank you very much, Simon, for taking us through that whistle stop tour of our favourite band breakups. Let's end just because by listening to Paul McCartney playing Band on the Run with Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters last weekend at Glastonbury.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.